Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
All right.
Welcome back to Cattle HQ, home of all things beef cattle. It is May 17th. We are outside Leola, South Dakota, at the world famous Beaver Red Angus Ranch, possibly the Red Angus capital of the world.
Oh, I don't know. We work hard at it.
Our guest today is Craig Beaver, owner operator of Beaver Red Angus. And we may have a guest or two pop by intermittently, but we'll just kind of field that as we go and do the best of what we got.
Yep. Sounds good.
Craig, thanks for taking the time to meet with us today. We've kind of been running with a common theme the last couple episodes about, you know, what it takes from a human resources, from a relationship, and from managing the human entity side of operations, large and small. You know, it's oftentimes those behind the scenes details that define the overall success of an operation.
It is, without a doubt. So
maybe just to get us started, talk about where the ranch started and has developed to, both from what you guys are doing, what you guys have going right now, as well as what it was like from a labor and resource standpoint when you started to what you're currently dealing with day to day now.
Yep. Well, so we're Beaver Red Angus. We run about 900 cows. We run about 900 Red Angus, registered Red Angus cows. We put in 300 to 400 embryos a year. We have, my dream probably is to have a sale a month, but human resource limitations to that. Right now we have a couple of flagship sales, one in March and another in November, March being yearling bulls and November being mostly females, but a few coming 2-year-old bulls or I should say 18 month old bulls. Age advantage actually is the term that is most popular.
The industry term.
Yes. Yes. And then we have an online sale, a female sale in April. We sell 80 to 100 private treaty bulls, kind of April, May, June. This year, we're trying a little online bull sale. We also have a small sale, about 50 to 70 head in Georgia in October. And so I guess we're always kind of busy doing something here when it comes to marketing cattle. So when I came back, it was my dad and, my dad was the main source of labor, sometimes had one hired man. To be honest, one of the things that happened is I quickly realized that in order for us to feed two families, something was going to have to change. We were going to have to scale it, or even three families if we were going to have some hired help or staff, as I now call them. We proceeded on learning a lot about that, probably learned a lot from the mistakes we made. I'm not sure we understood how to listen to people about how to manage staff. So through the years, we went all the way from being a revolving door to, you know, the place now where we're pretty stable in a lot of our positions, although we still have some entry-level positions that are it's just going to be the case that people rotate, and I'm a little more comfortable with that. So currently we have five full-time guys working under my cow boss and my son-in-law. They kind of run the day-to-day operations. My wife and I and my daughter handle a lot of the marketing, customer relations, bookkeeping. I do a tremendous amount of planning, and between my wife and I, we probably largely do most of the human resource stuff. That kind of outline what you're talking about?
Yeah. So you've got specialized people in meaningful lever positions to impact the whole.
Yep. So Craig Howard has been with us 17 years. Him and I have learned a lot about each other, but, him and I think a lot alike. And so that makes it easier when we're thinking day to day, but he's probably a lot better with the staff than I am. I tend to be a little bit more like a general and not really understand what's going on when it comes sometimes to morale. I have to have him stop me and tell me, hey, we got to do this. And so, you know, we have a good relationship. As a matter of fact, I think we have a tremendous team effort between him and I and my wife, Peggy, and our kind of our management team. Now, Jake, my son-in-law is recently, well, not recently, he's been with us 5, going on 6 years. You know, at some point, him and my daughter, Kristen, will take over the operation. And so he's trying to work into it, learning all levels, which was easier than it would be if he'd grown up here. He didn't come from an ag operation. And so,
which is significant.
Well, it makes a difference. I mean, trust me, he didn't have any bad habits. And, you know, so, or I shouldn't say any, but what we considered bad habits.
He hadn't had it coached into him all his
life. Yes. Yeah. And so we felt like we could work with him, mold him, and we made sure he's been involved in lots of good programs to kind of help him understand the industry, like BeefSD, and we've gotten involved in Learn from the Best with the Red Angus, which is a young breeders group and that sort of thing.
Yeah, he's just in the 3 short years that I've known him, he's really progressed as a cattleman. I mean, seeing him start out, and I mean, that's the whole reason that I'm here today, and that this relationship was even fostered in the first place. So just another testament to the great program that is BeefSD and how those connections get established. You never know where they're going to lead. But
exactly. I mean, and Jake actually has a nursing degree.
Right.
Yeah. Which is an oddity, but he came up with Kristen, and obviously I was scoping him out as a young man, but you know, he found interest in my passion. And I think now it's become his passion.
Yeah. That's awesome. And Craig, I mean, it seems like he's surely found his niche.
Yeah, very knowledgeable. I mean, the three of us really do like genetics and breeding cattle, making cattle better so that, so that our customers benefit from the work we do when it comes to making better genetics.
Yeah, absolutely. That's do you think that's an important part of creating this culture at Beaver Red Angus is attracting people that kind of share that common objective?
It is. I mean, not everybody understands it. All of them want to learn more, and that's helpful. I mean, I am different from that perspective. I don't expect them to just do things with no explanation. I try to explain to them what and why we're doing it, which is not always the case in our industry. There's just do it this way. That's how I want it done is probably but the reality is if you explain the foundation behind it, then the people can understand and they can also help you make it better. I mean, at times, you know, we had an employee who was probably not my favorite employee, but he questioned me about why we were doing all this breeding pasture sorting. And to be honest, he really made us think about it. And in the end, because DNA was at its beginning, sure, we just decided, why are we spending? You know, we used to spend 3 weeks sorting 35 head breeder. I shouldn't say that's probably a bit of an exaggeration, but a couple of weeks sorting breeding pastures, you know, because you have to sort pairs. And so it's problematic. It just takes a lot of time and then driving them to locations. Well, because he questioned me, I started thinking about it and I started figuring out ways to make it easier. Ultimately, in the end, we went to a situation where we turn out multiple, we AI once and then turn out multiple bulls and DNA them to figure out who the parents are. And I would tell you that our grass management is a lot better because of it.
Huh. That's awesome. Yeah, sometimes it just takes that random perspective to just flip something on its head. And
yep.
Yeah, they're all going to get DNA'd anyways.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we were already moving towards that.
Right.
It made a case that was the smart way to probably go about it and maybe the next step. And consequently, we've been doing it ever since then. Is we don't separate breeding pastures. We turn out 5 or 6 bulls in with 125 cows that have been AI'd, and then we just DNA everything to figure out what the parentage is, so we can keep our pedigrees and our data accurate.
Sure. So you brought up something interesting that I just kind of want your opinion on, because it was mentioned by actually a reference for a candidate that we interviewed several weeks back. And you know, she's a professor in industry, and just was speaking about the generational differences between, you know, people 20 years ago versus managing people now, from a graduate student, like mentor to mentee perspective, and how it's a lot, you have to be a lot more sensitive with that general philosophy. Like you can't just hammer on people yep. the way that you used to.
Yep. And you can't just tell them this is how it's going
right,
to be done.
Right. What do you think about that? You think
well,
that's going to be,
I mean, it took some adjusting for me because that's how I was growing yeah. up, but I also knew that I was not comfortable with that. I was not always comfortable. You know, part of it is my father was a real businessman, and he challenged us to challenge what we were doing. And one of his mantras was, let's not grow bigger, let's grow higher. Let's figure out how to make more money off of the acres that we have. And we were always thinking about it from probably, you know, I would tell you, I was thinking about it from both perspectives, but we were really trying to make ourselves more efficient in what we do. I mean, it's one of the there's things that we do that I hate. I mean, we have tended to phase back the use of horses because it's so much more efficient to grab an ATV or a UTV and go do five things while you're moving cows, like grab the mineral feeders, fix a little fence, check the water, you know, that sort of thing, which would take you all day on horseback, where, you know, usually in half a day you could do the very same thing, a whole bunch of things, you know. So it just challenges you to think about, you know, the resources that you have, and the human resources that you have are valuable. And so how do you do the most? And look, you know, our people are passionate about breeding cow, and we sure have some guys that would come here come and interview and would like to be on a horse all the time. You know, the truth is our business doesn't work if we're on a horse too much. We've got to be able to work these cattle in several manners. They go to a host of operations that work them anywhere from on foot to on ATVs to on horseback, you know? So, I mean, it feels like we're in a time when we got to get more done with less. And so you have less time. And so that's been part of our transition through the years, I guess.
There's horse trainers and there's cattlemen and there's those of us that are somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, my dad always felt like he was more of a businessman than a cattle rancher, but we are very passionate about breeding better cattle. I mean, it's why we do what we do.
Oh, absolutely. I think the animal breeder philosophy and mindset is I notice it in every aspect of my life, whether it's my dogs or my,
yep.
you know, it's,
yep.
it's
sometimes it's, what you don't want to talk about, but yeah,
it's deep in your blood.
Yes. Yep.
For sure.
Yep.
And just using everything that you have available to you. And you and I talked about it a little bit while we were driving around, but how important does the coachability of the people that you're bringing on to be a important team member?
You know, we found through interviewing, and we interview a fair number of people when we have a position open, we found that we don't settle. We find the right person who's willing for the job. Now, does he have the right skill set? Sometimes. Not completely, but his willingness is probably more important than the skill set. We've hired guys with excellent skill sets who just couldn't adjust to purebred livestock, how much we have to work them and all the AI and all the working cattle. And, you know, so it's, you know, I mean, we recently made a hire and to be honest, the young man doesn't have a lot of experience in cattle, or it's very limited. Probably not very positive from what he's told us. And we're, you know, we've talked to him about how that will change or he won't be here. And he says, I'm more than willing to learn because I felt like there was a better way. And so I think he's, you know, first of all, we've cultured him from the very beginning that we're going to do this differently and we're willing to train you and teach you, you know, if you're willing to invest the time. And he seemed very willing. And so we'll find out in 6 months whether I'm right or whether we are right, because we hire as a team. But, you know, I think that mindset with today's you know, young people is going to be absolutely necessary moving forward in order to expand operations or even maintain sometimes, because as you get older, you know, you can't do as much. You need to have some people hired.
So. Well, and time is, it's seriously your most valuable resource at the end of the day. And if you have employees leaving, then that turnover is high. That's just more time that you have to take to retrain, and it ends up
retrain or interview, retrain, screen, yeah, all that stuff takes lots of time, and we're surely more efficient when we have a stable crew.
Becomes a snake eating its tail over and over again.
Yep.
So what are some of the things that you guys do within, you know, because I just to provide some perspective for those of you listening, you know, I've obviously, with the exception of Jake, who's a married in lifer at this point, he's not getting out.
But
the longevity of and retention.
I can't have enough daughters to actually have.
Retention is super high, and that obviously has to come with an understanding and a willingness to accommodate what people are looking for out of this type of lifestyle. Maybe dive into that a little bit.
So, man, there's lots of components to that, but it's almost becoming, you know, a human resource manager. I mean, one of the things that, you know, we talked about a little earlier before we started the podcast is people that want to work here want to live in the country, and that's sometimes problematic. You know, we've added on enough places that we've rehabilitated old farmhouses and made it, you know, so we have housing for these individuals and a little place, you know, that they can kind of take care of and do things and that sort of thing. You know, I am a big believer in education. I have pushed, you know, I push my guys, and I usually, after about 6 months, I get them enrolled in some sort of added education. So you recently had an interaction with a couple of them. One of them had been here just like a year and a half. The other one has been only 6 months, but we came across an AI course that kind of worked for us for a timing, and they both wanted to try it, and they're excited about that opportunity. You know, I don't know if they will actually be the kind of guys that Craig Howard and Jake will let breed a lot of cows, but they're learning a new skill set, and they're happy about that. I do include them in some of the, you know, we have a discussion most every morning about a little something. Sometimes it's just about what's happening for the day. But for instance, this morning, we sold some feeder cattle yesterday, some heifers that were free Martins and some bulls that didn't make it for performance, disposition, fertility. And we discussed that paycheck. We discussed what the market was doing and some of that, and why I chose to do what I do. It was probably not as interesting this morning as it was 2 weeks ago when we sold the fat. I fatten the open cows, and I take some time doing that because in order to turn white fat, it takes a bit of time. But explaining all that to them, and then explaining to them why we marketed so late, because the white fat market this time of year gets pretty good. And so we found that, I mean, I think they found that interesting. Now, sometimes I feel like I don't get much response, but in the end, I think they value it that I include them in some of the things that I'm thinking about.
Right. Well, and it, you know, whether they're listening or not, it at least gives them the opportunity to stick it in some part of their brain where it might come in useful later on.
Yep.
That's
I mean, you know, the truth is what you hear when you're in your 20s and early 30s is less, you know, you're not always paying attention like you are when you're your later 30s, 40s, 50s. But I do think, you know, some of these guys don't have a large ag background. You know, one of them comes from a small farm, and the other comes from a little larger ranching area. This young man actually that's coming to us here most recently, he's grown up in town but worked on kind of small farms all his life, or since high school, I mean, which has not been long. But so, I mean, you know, just kind of keeping them interested by keeping them informed is something I do. And then trying to make sure they have opportunities for education that fit them.
That's super awesome. Yeah, I remember talking with Jackson, right?
Yep.
And yeah, he had very minimal experience and was just so, he was wide-eyed and, just trying to be that sponge and just soak in everything you were saying and remember. Because I know going into an AI class, you have to just tell those kids up front, like, there's semester-long classes taught just on this, so don't worry, relax a little bit
Yeah,
and
one
just
of the
try
things
to.
here is we give them some experience,
Yeah, for sure.
and that, I mean, we do feel that they deserve the opportunity if we're going to put them through that to do. And that's sometimes hard because, our guys have AI'd a lot of cows, and so you could stick to just the same guys, but at some point somebody's going to have a broken arm or be
Sick.
laid up or
Yeah.
sick or, and so if you can have somebody step up and fill in and do an okay job, it's a lot better position than.
Yeah. Or the yeah, one that you want bread on time before you go on vacation the next week is standing, but there's no one around to greet her besides so and so. Yeah.
Yep.
Do they have the coherency to go get that cow settled? Well,
Yep.
I mean, it really does become systemic. It becomes like from the cattle handling aspect all the way down to the shoot side. I mean, just really seeing people grab those components of all of
Yep.
that, and it makes them a better breeder, it makes them a better team member, and
Yep. Yep.
it helps the whole unit
Yep.
function way more
Yep.
so.
And there's lots of things. I mean, we're talking about breeding cattle and AI, but we need people that are passionate. And this is probably not our best passion, but passionate about maintenance on equipment. I mean, or at least, interested in getting it done so we don't have as many breakdowns as we might have. So, I mean, we, so I, yeah, we talked about an AI course, but getting them involved in a maintenance course from New Holland
Oh, yeah.
or one of those is also on my mind. And watching for those opportunities is important.
Thinking outside the box. I was going to toss in there just since you brought it up, the bull cow white fat market. We do like a reference note. It currently, it's not out yet, but it will be out probably about by the time this episode goes live. SDSU Extension will have a cost economic analysis calculator for a cull cow
Oh, that'd
enterprise.
be interesting.
So yeah, well, I'll have to send you a copy and be sure to check that
Well,
out.
I no matter what, I mean, I will guarantee you that I benefit from length of ownership just by market appreciation, if,
Right.
even if I don't make them white.
Right.
But the truth of the matter is, this time of year, and we're talking April, May, is when we're visiting, there's a big surge in the market generally, and those cows are going to provide hamburger for that summer grilling market, and trim, and so. There's definitely something to be said for doing that, whether you make them white fat or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And just being aware of that, those overall market conditions and fluctuations
Yep.
in supply and demand.
We push so hard at production, and it seems the most productive to get your open cows down, gone and down the road. But the reality is if they're thin, you're taking a beating, in my opinion, okay? And if you just leave them, even if you were in a range environment, just unless you were short of feed, but if you had some extra feed, you kept them with your cow herd and just made sure they gained weight during the winter, which you do on most of your gestating cows, you're probably benefiting from some market appreciation.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys are right in the middle of breeding,
Yep.
about done breeding. You said
Yeah,
heifers are
we're
done.
yeah, heifers were on second cycle. Or we've already done second cycle. We have time bred our 2-year-olds. They're actually out the grass. The way we end up doing it is we time breed everything and we go to grass when we breed. It's maybe not perfect, but it's the situation we're in because of when we think we need to calve and how our workflow goes and that sort of thing. And then this week is kind of the final week of breeding. What we call spring calving cows, a lot of people call late winter, but are January, February, and early March calves. So,
Sure. So, and then you guys still have some that are string out
yeah.
a
Well,
separate
then,
group that are
yeah,
reproductive.
then we have a second calving group that starts not till the end of April. Calves mostly in May, early June. They're synchronized in late July, early August. And we actually market those bulls as age advantage bulls in November, October, November. And then we have a few private treaty bulls coming into the spring from that group. So, Some people want some age advantage. I mean, you know, that's different. People want different things. And if you're going to sell more bulls, in my opinion, you're going to have to vary what you can market when.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. I think you touched on it earlier. So what I want to ask is if you get what you want and get a sale every month, will you quit?
I probably have a divorce coming with my wife.
Will I just cab you around?
No, I'm not. No, I don't. We can't do that from a workflow perspective. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't envision that we would cab much differently. You know, there could be a deal where we'd add a fall calving component and maybe calve, but you know, I'm just not sure that I'm not sure how you sustain that with a crew, you know, and then you really, one of the things that I've always thought is you need to have enough to make it work. We started with fall calvers. Found out it wasn't working because the feed resources weren't. I mean, we were feeding them all during their lactation, which from a cost perspective, in the very bad winters was a huge loss. I would think it would be even a little bit tough, even in a average to, you know, below or above average quality winter. And then, you know, so we actually, funny thing, we turned out bulls while they were calving. We moved 70% of those cows up to a May-June timeframe. We didn't pull them over. We moved them up. I mean, this was a little challenging to what I thought, but Roy Wallace was a mentor of mine at the time. And he said, Craig, just turn out a bull while they're calving and you'll be surprised. And we were in strides. So we sold the fall calvers that year and then moved them to May, June. And when we moved them to May, June, you know, that just made more sense. We were calving out on grass. Ultimately, that was a good fit for us. You know, those calves come in a lot lighter. They take a lot more time to get to, you know, we wean them usually in mid-October. You know, we're weaning our what we call our spring calvers or January, February, March is we're weaning them in usually early September, late August, early September. And then those summers will come off kind of the middle of October. And I guess, you know, we feel like we got a lot more time. I don't know. You know, people ask me all the time, what system's better? Well, it's kind of what fits you and your personnel. I don't know from an economic standpoint that we do that much better. We have more live calves, but we also sell our yearlings higher. So I think in the end, and we don't have as much time invested from a feed and yardage perspective. So, you know, because we do have a lot of time and money invested in those age advantage bulls that are 18 months when we sell them, because we have them for a longer period of time, and there's going to be a charge for either the feed and yardage or the pasture or whatever. And trust me, from a pasture perspective, having 140 young bulls out on pasture, it's a lot more man hours just keeping them in.
I believe it. But you know, that's something that I think I sure wouldn't hate to see the industry start to transition to seeing more of those age advantage 2-year-old bulls. I mean, that just as someone who's trying to see producers buy bulls sometimes sight unseen and have success, you know, that just makes me feel so, well, I'm glad you got 2 years. They've had an extra year to develop and grow up. They should be able to service more cows. You should feel more comfortable paying a little bit more for
it. I do think, Kieran, it's a wash, because I think on the yearling bulls, you expose more cows for one more year. I mean, so I have customers on both sides of the fence. And I will tell you what works in their operation is different. I have customers who will only buy yearlings because they think they get one more year. Now, I think maybe when they really figured it out, they lose more. And so maybe there is an advantage to the age advantage bulls. But it, you know, ultimately it's a personality thing. What fits you best is really what it comes down to.
So the gentleman who taught me how to breed cows, he was a veterinarian. That was his whole deal, was he'd buy 30 yearling Charolais bulls and just toss them out, and it worked for him. And it was a very low input system, and he was selling bred heifers and sending them down the road. And
Yep. I mean, it ultimately every operation is going to be different. How they manage that and how they manage that with their people is a different scenario and a different way to, how you're going to approach things.
Quite a balancing act, because I, just maybe touch a little bit on balancing that dynamic of, yes, we could probably pedal to the metal, push the gas, and sell more bulls, but also we'll end up frying people.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, look, we have some young men, we have some young men with young families, and the old we so here at Beaver Red Angus, we work a bit more corporate hours, but we found that that's necessary, that their wives want to know when they're going to be home. I mean, the old adage, well, we work till dark, and we get guys who apply and say, well, I'll work as long, or even had one guy tell me, I'll work you under the table. But the problem is we got to be here 365 days a year, and we're not, this is not a construction deal where we can get summers or winters off or what have you. It's every day in and day out. And so we work, I mean, my guys know, depending on the time of the year, what time they're coming to work and what time they're going home for the most part. Now, I won't tell you it's, to that minute every day, but and there are days when they end up going later, and we try to make sure, that they get comp for that. But the reality is, we've tried some things where it was pedal to the metal, and you burn the crew out, and in time, you're either replacing them or everybody's shot, and so you got to think about that from a staff morale and just an overall mental health and well-being sort of perspective, so that you make sure you can keep them fully engaged. I mean, to be honest, this winter was, a classic one. It was even tough for me to stay engaged and energetic. I mean, it was an everyday, week after week blizzard and challenges and, equipment repair costs and so, figuring out how that works for your operation. I, as a young man, I probably thought there was one way to do it. But as I have matured, everybody's kind of figured out their system, and hopefully it works for them. Some guys are only going to be owner operators and probably have no staff, and I get that. I mean, I actually there are times when I am probably jealous, but in order to In order, for us at the time, the direction I was led is if we're gonna adequately fund multiple families, we're gonna have to do something different. And that, that's kind of where that journey's taken us.
When you're a grandpa now, if you ever want to actually get to spend some time with the grandkids,
Well,
that's good.
yeah, I'm lucky because they come to the office, or some of them come to the office every day, and so my wife and I get lots of opportunities, and Peggy, if she claims she can't get much work done, we're there. But if you hear her laugh, it's infectious when the grandchildren are out there coloring beside her and working. And we've had Hartley up here. She's got her desk behind my desk. She has all of her stuff, and she gets on the phone and she's trying to sell bulls and make lists for Craig Howard and her daddy and all kinds of things. So I don't. I mean, I sometimes wonder if we're not these kids aren't getting a work ethic built in from the age too. But
Next generation's already in school.
it's good to have them around, and it does give me a lot more energy when they come. So.
So something that I know can vary hugely just on how it's done and whether it's allowed to be done at all, that I know that you're an advocate of is employees having an independent cow, the cows of their own.
Yeah, well, they run cows here in our
Right.
situation. They get to run so many cows. After a year, they get an opportunity to run cows. It's a limited number based on years of service, but and then we don't charge them anything for that. It's kind of how we scale salaries. Add to salaries. They get to sell those individuals through our sales. If the progeny through individuals or the progeny through those
Oh,
sales,
that's cool.
and then we do take a 25% kind of fee for anything we sell through our operation. But some of that's cover sale expense, and a little bit of the fee doesn't cover all of it. but we do, you know, we do keep that figure. So what I would tell you is that it gives them skin in the game. And I've heard through my years, I've heard lots of pros and cons to why you should or shouldn't. I think if the culture's such, they understand that all the cattle got to perform in order for their cattle to even sell better. They get that. We're not paying, you know, my crew for the most part is not really paying attention to who owns what. They're paying attention to the overall herd health and that's
it. It's just a neat feeling to be able to say, well, especially maybe if you're having one of those general-esque moments of rage and yelling, it's like, oh, well, at least they're my cows, and yeah. You know, I'm part of it. It's yeah, we're fired
and,
up.
And we had a nine-year employee leave. He's cashing in his cows and taking that money on with him. Now, he had the option to even take those cows with him. Where he was going, he went into the banking industry, and he didn't really
didn't have use for him.
I mean, one of his deals was he wanted to have some weekends off, or I should say a full weekend, Saturday and Sunday, because we do work at 12 too. So they're off 2 and on 12. We don't do a lot on Sundays during the summer, but there are a few chores that have to happen. So.
Right.
But he, you know, he cashed out those cows under, you know, what we have kind of a system set up for what happens when you leave. And I kind of go through that with him in his exit interview, and it's all been very cordial. Not that it's going to be that way all the time, but we've had other people exit, and look, I'm a man of my word. I, you know, at that point we do charge them running costs and that sort of thing, but they can move out with some money they have invested, which we feel they deserve. So,
right. That's awesome. You guys have a sale coming up 2 weeks from 2 weeks from today, right?
2 weeks from today, we're going to have our first online bull sale. So we've had turnout sales in the past. We've always had kind of 80 to 100 private treaty bulls to sell through the summer. But this year we're going to go to an online format and on a good share of those. And so we'll have videos up and that sort of thing. Matter of fact, today they were out there working on videos when you came and, you know, we're getting all that stuff. I mean, that's something that we could quickly talk about is, you know, so we're very more scheduled than the typical operation. We actually keep a Google calendar.
Cool.
All my guys have access to it. They can't change it, but
they can see it,
but they can see what's going on. And between Peggy and I and Kristen, we put in all the events. If they want time off, we get that blocked out for them. But they know at the beginning of the week or Sunday night or whatever, they can look at what's going on for the week and they can kind of see in general what's happening.
Yeah. What needs to be done.
Yep. Yep.
Because, you know, from what it sounds like, you spend most of your time handling the phone calls and the
feedstock sales and HR kind of stuff. And then just scheduling and ordering and deciding what the best strategy is for us, you know? So yes, I do spend, you know, more than I ever envisioned. I mean, a lot of guys would not be comfortable doing what I do all the time, but it's kind of what it's grown into. And you know, at some stage of my life, it's probably all right. There are times when my wife will tell you, I really get frustrated and tell her, I got to get out of here. I'm going out to get in the payloader and scrape aprons or something like that. But for the most part, and I do, you know, I do help them feed, especially on weekends over the winter. I actually take Sundays, or a lot of times I'll take Sundays. It depends on how we're staffed, but a lot of times when we were a little short, I would work every Sunday so that the off crew could all be off, and then I would take Saturdays. And Peggy, my wife, is so great about that because we made that work. We got to see the grandchildren that don't live on the ranch that day. You know, we always went and did something with them. And so, you know, I'm very blessed to be blessed with a very understanding wife and a wife who understands that what we do is important to me. So,
oh, that's great. You guys did a couple of those online sales this year on the female side, didn't
you? We did. We had, so this online female sale in the third week of April was actually our fourth on female in April. And so we have ventured into the online, you know, sales. We have broadcast our sales since the very beginning on DV auction. But, you know, we just think it's COVID changed all that. Sure. Matter of fact, I wish I had bought DV auction before COVID, but, you know, COVID changed that people are, you know, more engaged in online auctions.
It definitely more sped up that
way. Yeah. And they're more orientated to look at the videos and the data. I do think, you know, part of what I did was, is we did go to, in 2010, we ran video and ran the Bulls through the ring. And in 11, we went to just video. My dad didn't give me any other choice, actually, after the sale. Some things happened at the sale that made it apparent that they were watching the video, because we had a bull come in the ring and a different bull was on video. And a lot of the buyers looked up and said, that's not the right bull.
Oh.
And so we knew they were watching it. So he went and tore the posts out that we had, the cement posts that we had for the ring out. And we went to a format that, you know, where we broadcast online and we don't run the bulls through the ring. Yeah, so that's been kind of interesting, you know, that transition.
No, I think that's good. That's a good segue into somewhere that I wanted to get to anyways. We do have Jake in here now.
Yep, Jake just joined us. Jake is my son-in-law, as I talked about earlier.
And so he can.
So we're going to get his perspective on some of the things that I'm doing wrong or right.
Having this well-oiled machine that's just running and letting you kind of take care of the behind-the-scenes stuff and keep it chugging along. What are some of those things that are going to, you know, there's every different catalog page has a different thing that's going to drive your dollar this year,
yep,
and going to be the most important thing up and coming. What are some of those things that just time and time again have been important for the last decade and or generation of cattle production will continue to be important?
So are you mean like basic traits in the cattle or traits in the catalog?
Traits in the cattle,
yep.
Members of the team.
Yep.
Robotics and machinery and automation in the industry.
You come
right in.
Okay.
Anyone wants to go?
Well, first? You know, so I think the simple thing we do is we set up a schedule well in advance of the sale. That way everybody kind of knows, okay, so by this date we got to have the bulls picked out. And by this date they got to be lauded. And by this date, or the first date is we got to have all the data. The second date is probably we got to pick out which bulls are going to be in the sale. But we schedule this. Kristen sits down and we back away. We basically back into it from when we think we need to mail catalogs. And sometimes I push her a little hard on that. But I think one of the things is you think about it from a work perspective, if you know it's coming, it's a lot easier to make, you know, to kind of get that, to get everybody on board at what needs to happen when. And so a lot of what between Kristen and I, we do a lot of scheduling based on how quickly it can be printed, and then, you know, we just back into dates. You know, when do the bulls got to be clipped? When do they got to be videoed by? When do they got to be semen tested? Cows got to be preg tested before the sale. You know, just all that stuff gets more scheduled. And I don't know, you can comment on this, Jake, but, you know, we also try to put that in the calendar. So consequently, all of the staff kind of knows that that's going to happen.
I think to sum that up, the one word is consistency. I mean, each year is different, but it's also the same in the sense that we know what we need to do leading up to the sale. And it's just getting that laid out far ahead of time so we know what's going on. But each year it's consistently the same for the most part. And I think that helps the whole crew just work better because we know, you know, we need time off. We kind of know what's coming up. So we need to really talk about when we can and can't be gone or just what's going to happen. So I think that's, for me, that's really what's helpful.
Right before you walked in, we were talking a little bit about, you know, just making sure that communication is there and how you guys share a calendar, make sure that everybody can see what's going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think me and some coworkers like to make the joke a lot of times, especially like when we get onto the transition and estate transition planning and stuff like that, that everybody typically thinks of that stuff telepathically. Like they just assume what everybody else is thinking.
Yep.
And
so we're going through some of that right now. Of course, my, you know, the original generation of Bieber and Angus, my dad has passed away, but my mom's still alive. And so obviously she holds some of the land. But then Peggy and I are actually working on, and I know that, I hope I know that frustration is probably not moving as fast as Jake would like to, because I know what I was like as a young man. But the reality is that we're trying, and it's a slow process, and I'm trying to keep him informed. So I'll let him talk.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been, again, I think it's going to happen from our stage of the game. Like, you have your idea on what the big goal is, but the nitty-gritty, you don't really have the fine-tuned things on what's going on. And that can be daunting, a little frustrating, a little scary at the same time. But I think now we're kind of moving in a space, and I think Craig and Peggy have been communicating with us well that, hey, we don't have all the answers yet, but we're trying to figure it out. And I think for us, that's just good to know that it is being talked about. It's not just being set aside like, hey, we'll talk about it later, we'll talk about it later. It's like, no, we are having conversations.
Yeah.
And that, for me, that brings a lot of pride.
Part of it was, is we set something up when you came back here at a certain point. If you decided you were going to stay, we said we'd start moving through this. And I forget exact time. Was it 2 years?
Yeah.
And we start working in that process. Well, it probably took us another year to get going on it. And then it was took us all of that to find what we thought was the right people to help us with that. I think we went down some paths where we weren't sure the people that were helping us understood what we wanted. And then it took us a while to get with what we thought, what we think are the right people. And I'm not, you know, convinced. And this summer we hoping to move in further down the road and what that's looking like and how we incorporate Jake and Kristen into that. And, you know, Peggy and I want to slow up some. So it's all that.
It's awesome. What I want to know is what bulls Bieber Red Angus is breeding to this breeding.
So one of the things that we do here is we try to limit the number of sires. So on 900 cows and the embryos, it'll be pretty much down to 6 to 8 sires from an AI perspective. Now there are some cleanup bulls, but I'm a big believer that increases generational consistency because you have your females out of less sires. So we really do try to tighten it down. That's not always easy. We're still using stock market and Energize. Those bulls have done us a great job. We always try to find an outside sire every year. We want to be well referenced to the database. And then we're using some young sires. I guess the young sire particularly that I can think of we're using is Checkmate, who is the the paycheck son that Select Sires bought. There was another one, but he hasn't froze semen as of yet, or I think he's close, or I haven't heard that he's froze semen. The paycheck K102 bull that Alta bought. But
was that the one with his grandpa was black? Keneally bull?
No.
I couldn't remember. There was one that sold this spring that had a black bull in his pedigree, and I remember seeing it.
Was it at Papers?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, there was a Confidence Plus
grant. Yeah. I didn't know. I'm new enough to the seed stock deal that I didn't know that.
There's always breeders who take the opportunity to use some black genetics. And Tate Beaver found at Brown's, he found a black red carrier that was a Confidence Plus. That was a pretty good bull.
Yeah.
Bred him to a limited number of cows, and then he died. And they produced a $400,000 bull out of it, a red bull. And they had some black ones that probably didn't bring as much. Well, they sold one $20,000 black one, but most of us, the black red carriers bring a discount to what the reds will sugar instead.
Just due to the lack of consistency.
Yeah. Well, lack of interest. You know, guys who want black ones don't necessarily want red ones unless they're running a mixed herd. So there are guys with mixed herds. Generally, they're looking for value from that situation, so they're not paying, they're not probably paying top prices. But, we did, you're going to get a kick out of this. But, so we did buy a brother to that bull.
Okay.
And 3 weeks later, he did something in the pen and died, dropped over dead. So we aren't going to be seeing any calves out of here.
But it looks great.
He looks great. We're
really excited about it.
Yes. And we don't generally insure bulls under 50,000. We just think self-insurance. The reality is if you probably take it over a period of time, I think you can self-insure and be just as well off because the cost is the same.
Right.
Or going to be about the same, unless you're a high loss, you know, outfit, you know. But that's part of it. That's yeah. part of the business, you know. So,
I don't want to take too much of your time. I know you've done some work in the past with U.S. Export Board and some stuff like that.
Yeah, I was on the USMEF Meat Federation. I was been on the South Dakota Beef Industry Council. I've been president of the Beef Improvement Federation and been on their board for five or six years. Been on the Red Angus board twice. This I'm actually doing my second stint. I did one back. Well, I was president in the 99-2000, and I did 5 years on the board before that.
Sure.
So I've been involved in the industry. I'm also on the South Dakota Cattlemen's Board as vice president of membership. I mean, part of it is I'm passionate about the business. I believe we need to be involved to protect our industry. I also think we need to be informed, and you can't necessarily be well-informed sitting at home.
Absolutely. And sometimes you have to advocate for yourself.
Yep. Yep. Now, I do think there are good people who advocate for us, and sometimes it requires funding them because, you know, but yes, I do think you do at some point need to be responsible for getting out there and doing a little bit of it. It's something I've, you know, hopefully cultured my kids to do. I don't know that maybe we've done the best job on staff, but, you know, that depends on interest level. Some people don't like politics. I maintain that you play politics every night with your dog by trying to get them to go in a kennel or not bark or whatever. So I think you're involved in politics in every part of your life. And so, you know, it's just a different level.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's well, funny. Well, no, the reason I bring it up, you know, I saw something the other day online and, you know, given current market situations, 2014-esque, high prices, futures board looks good. Pounds matter. You need to need to maximize the pounds that you're taking and getting paid for. And, you know, I just would love to hear your thoughts on capitalizing and setting yourself up to capitalize on a good opportunity without, you know, single trait selecting and maybe compromising some other things like fertility and potentially some other long-term longevity characteristics just to make a quick buck.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, look, we're in it for the long haul. And so that's on the top of our mind all the time is producing cattle that work in a commercially orientated environment. So, you know, I mean, look, we joke around here sometimes. What do they like better than a fat one? It's a fatter one. But, I mean, I want these cattle to go out and be successful for people. And I really think that we got to have stacked generations of good genetics that will grow on forage and then go to a feedlot and can consume, harvested feeds efficiently and quickly. You know, in order to get, you know, look, the basis of some of what I think is that consumers, especially through COVID, found that they like beef and they like high quality beef. Matter of fact, export numbers would show you right now that we're actually not exporting as much as we were because we're consuming it here in the U.S. And I think part of that is through COVID, people learned how to cook steaks, grill. And I think that's made a difference in the marketplace. Now, you know, I get a little cautious because we could get ourselves into a situation where the lack of supply hurts consumer demand. Maybe not. But I just, you know, I'm cautious that if meat gets too high, you know, we could have challenges from pork and chicken.
Sure.
So I don't know that I got to your question. I probably think a much more macro answer to it.
But I think in between that, I mean, we want pallet form in the feedlot just as well as those females are going to produce those calves to go there as well. You know, I think, yeah, I mean, we're big on performance and carcass traits, but I think we've gotten our female herd to a point where, you know, they're pretty consistently raising a good calf. I mean, we'll find the outliers, but the biggest thing is just making sure they're doing their job and bulls can go and have those daughters. They'll do the same for them.
Yep.
And I think that's just such a cool, and I want to make sure to emphasize that here, you know, the being extremely picky on those 6-8, you know, small number of sires, I'm assuming, besides, you know, the novel ones that you likely purchased or raised yourself that are just young by themselves, the rest are probably pretty high accuracy sires.
Yep.
And just how much of a difference that makes in creating that pasture full of cookie cutter females in contemporary groupings.
It does. I mean, it really improves overall quality, and it does it quickly, and we can make progress quickly, in my opinion. Your thoughts, Jake?
Yeah, and I think, you know, you can kind of figure out what you like and don't like about a sire pretty quick too. You know, you have a good grouping and you can figure out which ones really perform, which ones are going to use the next year, and which ones that we're just like, hey, we're not going to go forward with. I think it gives us a good idea for that.
Awesome.
So you guys got sale 2 weeks from now, going back to Georgia this year.
Yep.
And then what else?
Female sale in November. So female sale in November. And then
we'll probably have one in between.
Maybe an embryo sale scattered in there somewhere.
So, you never know. We've had occasionally or an online semen sale.
Yeah, you gotta clean the tank out.
Well, at Christmas is a good time to do that because people are sitting around thinking, hey, I'm just gonna get this for myself for Christmas on some of the older rare semen stuff. But, yeah, who knows? We've done that. I mean, I also we'll balance that back to our original subject was, you know, you can't push the crew too hard, do everything that I envision, but, you know, so you need to be careful about what you can handle and what's the most profit.
Got to give Jake some time off.
He's
very harrow.
Yeah. They enjoy being out here too. That's a lot.
How do you see it from, you know, maybe try to remove the son-in-law side, but just as the employee side, you know, as the coming into an operation and being able to communicate what you need in terms of maintaining your life outside of the ranch and you know, just being able to communicate your overall success.
Yeah. I mean, it gets, you know, like anywhere, it gets easier as you kind of have a little more seniority and you have a little more say in things and understand how things work. You know, like January through March, Kristen and I both know it's kind of a time where we aren't going to go anywhere and we're just be working late, and that's just how it is. You know, summer, it's opening up. We already have some things planned. And I think as long as you communicate a while ahead of time that, hey, I'd like to have this time off, it's not just like a last minute thing, then we can schedule around it. And I feel like the staff around here, we're getting, you know, with interns and more help in the summertime, it allows us to take a little more time away as well. But yeah, I mean, that, I don't know, I don't like to say work-life balance. I kind of call it a harmony. I mean, because in the end, family is always going to outweigh the work, but it's trying to just play those two together. And I think right now it's, you know, young kids and everything, it's going to be hard, but this summer it's going to ease up and it's going to be better in the way of ranching, I guess. You love what you do every day. It's going to be harder days, and that's okay.
Absolutely. What do you see as the key to, you know, keeping good people that want to stay and live this lifestyle enticed to live it for the next, after you've inherited the reins?
So from my experience, I guess the biggest thing is making sure those people who come here want to actually learn. I think that's the first step. You know, Howie and I have, and Craig all talked, we are willing to teach, and I've learned a lot from Howie and Craig. And that's because I wanted to learn. I was asking questions and, you know, like, yeah, there is some hard talks that need to be had, and that's okay. That's how you learn. As long as you're willing to take those as not a failure, but a learning experience, I think that's what's important. But yeah, I mean, as long as a culture here, we're willing to say, hey, you made a mistake. That's okay. We're just going to build off it and move ahead. I think that's been the biggest thing that I learned from Howie and Craig is that, and I've made some big mistakes here and costly ones as well, but they just said, okay, hey, it sucked, but let's move on.
Short-term memory.
Yep.
Well, you know, I've always maintained you learn way more from your mistakes than you do your successes. You remember how devastating they were to financial morale, all that sort of thing. And so, you know, I mean, you know, just wading through them or, you know, getting through them and explaining how you do it differently the next time is important.
Sometimes that's that coachable moments. You almost don't even need to say anything. You can just let them. They already know how much it sucks.
Yeah.
You can discuss it in a calmer manner later.
Yep.
Yeah, that's where it starts with. If you're willing to learn and recognize that you did make a mistake, I think that's, you know, sometimes a trait not everyone has, and recognizing that they did make a mistake.
True.
So going forward, though, like, again, those people who want to do this, I think it's, I mean, I love being up here. I mean, I never have regretted my decision to get out of corporate America into this lifestyle. Just, you got to want it.
Cat's out of the bag. He already sold you out on your degree.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I'm great at getting shots.
Who would have thought?
I know. I never saw that one coming. My parents never did either.
Yeah, whatever. The medical training came in handy one way or the other. Whether it's on a calf or on yourself when you nick something.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, that duct tape's an amazing thing.
You guys got anything else? Any shout outs you want to give?
Oh, I'd like to thank my wife. You know, she's Peggy has been amazing through this journey of helping me build this and that sort of thing. So, I mean, Peggy Bieber is an incredible woman. I think she deserves a lot more credit than she'll take.
Well, first of all, Craig and Peggy for raising Kristen and then bringing us back here. But, you know, Kristen is, she's the rock at home. I mean, we're working a lot of hours and she just takes care of the kids and doesn't complain, has everything done at home. And yeah, can't do it without.
Well, you know, when we talk about, you know, Craig Howard's wife, Lindley,
yep,
actually was an intern here, but you know, she, Craig and Lindley have been incredible to us. And, you know, I mean, we make an incredibly powerful team, him and I, but he couldn't do it without the support he gets from his wife as well.
Right.
That's it. I guess that's coming right off of a Mother's Day.
Yeah.
The week after Mother's Day. Yeah. So, but honestly, we couldn't do it without their support.
No better time.
Yeah.
And all of the, yeah, all the folks that keep behind the scenes that keep things running. Well,
say all the guys here. I mean,
yeah.
Yep. We've had, through the years, you know, some of them aren't with us anymore, but we've had incredible staff and I've been honored to know almost all of them. You know, occasionally there's been some things that didn't work out or personalities didn't fit like we thought or situations changed, what have you. But, you know, we've had a lot of good people work for us through the years.
Right. Well, that's awesome. It's always a pleasure to come up and get to drive around and see you guys. And hopefully I'll be back a little sooner than the last hiatus. But
yep.
Got branding in July for you.
Deal. Sounds good. Yeah.
Thank you, Greg.
Yeah. This has been another episode of Cattle HQ by SDSU Extension. Make sure to check the show notes and tune in next time.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.